The Anton Savage Show with Kearies.ie on News Talk.
It is News Talk. It is the Anton Savage Show. With me is Louisa Meehan, Woodview HRM, HR and dispute resolution expert, and Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor of the Irish Times. And there's much to discuss this morning. We have warnings of an increase in whooping cough, and whooping cough may not sound like much, but as one doctor is putting it in the piece in the Irish Daily Mail, if 1,000 kids get whooping cough, 2 of them will die of whooping cough. And it seems to be a function of a vaccine hesitancy or a vaccine wariness coming out of COVID. There are also analysis inside the Irish Independent about RTE's barter account and what, if anything, will be done to resolve RTE's funding. But where we start is with the front page of, Mark, your paper, the Irish Times, reporting that Russian disinformation is targeting Irish votes. And what the paper is saying is that a French security agency has got in touch with the Irish Department of Foreign Affairs to say, look, Russia is actively extending its disinformation activities into Ireland, trying to cause as much upset and problems as is possible in the run-up to the local and European elections.
Yes, and there's considerable evidence that that's happening. And if you look at your own social media feeds, people will have seen changes in the way in which the kind of material that is coming through and the volume that's coming through and the number of accounts with, you know, X at billion number .com or whatever. So, you know, all of that is entirely true. And it just shows you yet again that people have to look at what they read and where they get their information from. And, you know, Russia has been doing this. You saw in the last week the evidence that they're interfering with GPS signals with aviation in Eastern Europe. This is not a game, you know, and we need to be aware. And it is all about the whole issue of media literacy and people having a greater understanding of the sources of information. And I'm not saying that all of them should read the Irish Times, although I'd prefer if they did. But wherever they get their information, they need to be going to people who have previously tried to tell them the truth.
The thing that I worry about with that, Mark, is that is to suggest that people get their information from primary sources. But people get their information from secondary sources. It's a friend who passes on a video. You look at what Steve Bannon did with Breitbart, Breitbart actively would build stories until the New York Times would report the underlying story, or just that it's a social media trend. And that then gave it the imprimatur of credibility, and they were able to push it even more.
No, absolutely.
Very difficult to wade your way through that.
It is extremely difficult. I mean, you know, we've all had occasions over the last number of years where people in our immediate social circle have been effectively radicalized in one, either about vaccination or about immigration or about whatever. And I'm not, you know, arguing the merits of the individual item. But when you see people who 3 months previously had no opinions on X becoming absolutely worked up to the point where every time you meet them, you can predict what their opening sentence is going to be. You know, that's not something that's normal, nor is it healthy, nor is it right. And more importantly, nor is it accurate.
Why in that case, Louisa Meehan, do we not get more concerned about it? There is a sense that if you bring up active misinformation or disinformation, particularly if you say, as this report does, because the French security is saying, look, we have evidence to believe the Russians are doing this and are now targeting Ireland. There's almost a sense of, oh, here we go, tinfoil hattery, conspiracy theory stuff, don't bother me with this guff.
Well, I mean, I think if you look at how the human brain works, there's a thing called the negativity bias. And what it means is that we are biologically inclined to look for negative and to prevent harm to ourselves more than to look for the positive. So a lot of this disinformation, a lot of the scaremongering, a lot of the conspiracy theories harp into that. So they don't share happy stories. They don't share positive stories. They don't share good news. They share things that make us scared, things that incite fear in us. And I think actually we need to take a step back. And I agree with Mark completely. The issue is broader than Russia and the elections in June. We can get over that. We can find good sources of information and all of that's incredibly important. But we need to take a step back and say, well, how are we identifying sources of information? Because, you know, I teach in university and we talk about peer-reviewed literature. And that's where we really as academics look for most of our information. Most people are not going to do that. It's a lot of work. But if we look to the internet, and if we look particularly to social media, and we get to a point where the individual sharing the information has to be authenticated and identifiable as a human being and not as a bot or a computer or somebody in Russia who's talking about something that's going on in Newtown and Kennedy, for example, then we can start to break down those barriers. And I can start to say, well, actually, I'm interested in what my community think about this issue. I don't really care what people in Texas think about what's going on in Wicklow. It doesn't bother me. They can think whatever they want. But I do care about what my friends in Newtown and Kennedy think. I do care about what people in Dublin think. I do care about what people in Leitrim think. So I can, if I can identify the source of the information, then I can start to filter out the disinformation. I think that's a fundamental change in terms of data privacy that we need to take. And that will take governments to put laws and regulations in place. But more importantly, it will take the organisations who have the power and the resource to put in place rules around this. And we need
But we're
ethics.
A million miles away from that, aren't we?
We are, but it's simple
even,
to do.
We're not even at the starting stall stage. All of the social media companies all have an interest in making people angry because it attracts audience. You know, we had a meeting with a journalist, a National Union of Journalists, with social media companies last year, raising concerns about threats to personal security. And all of the companies came in and said, we believe in journalism, we believe in democracy, we will do everything possible to support the democratic process. Information was given about real and credible threats to journalists, and they replied, we believe in democracy, we believe in journalism, we will do everything possible. They don't care, you know, and there's no way of making them care because of the global nature of the business. And you see the fundamental models where the kind of stuff that are published on Twitter or Facebook or whatever else, if any of that was published in the Irish Times, or the vast majority of it was published in the Irish Times, we would be sued and put out of business in a week.
But the bit that I don't understand in this is the election interference is a proven reality. I mean, you as Ireland Britain editor would know it, but the Intelligence and Security Committee of Parliament did what they recalled the Russian report, which said it was endemic and systemic interference with the British electoral process. Likewise, the US, the Senate Intelligence Commission did the same thing, said that there is systematic and vast interference in the election. Yet, we sort of say, there is no major European response, there's no government response, nobody seems to care.
Because you are dealing with global companies who are uniquely powerful in ways that we've never seen before. You know, in the Irish case, you know, we're utterly compromised because we are the source of their, we take all of their tax revenues. You know, if you saw the graph the other week of the tax reporting by multinationals across the world, this huge spike for Ireland, huge spike for Singapore, and everybody else is getting crumbs, you know. So we're in no position to be going knocking at the door as a government to Facebook and saying, you know, I mean, you know, none of this makes any sense. We are the only way that you can deal with companies like this is on some sort of a global pattern, or else you do some sort of local censorship. And, you know, that's not something that anybody would want, and nor is it probably technically possible.
And of course,
unless you're running a country like China.
I suspect the really tricky bit in this is, Louise, when we look at it, there is a tendency to think that if we're talking misinformation or disinformation, it is pushing a single agenda. But in actual fact, the only agenda is have us chewing each other's legs. A bit like what happened in the US with the binary split in the election. As long as everybody's fighting with each other over something, that's a success if you're Russia.
It's almost like a magician, and it's an illusion. Distract people, have them looking over here so that they're not paying attention to what's really going on over here. Mm. And, you know, it comes back to credible information. And I agree with Mark. We need to look at credible journalism. We need to look at credible sources. We need to look at research, and research changes. It's not, I'm not suggesting that, you know, you can research something today and there isn't new research in a year that is different, but look at what are the credible research-based sources of information when we're making real serious decisions in relation to our lives, like deciding who our new politicians will be, like deciding how we want our society to work, like deciding how we want to make big...
But let me put it to you this way. That is to suggest that people go on social media and say, I am now seeking new information and will thoughtfully consider the information that I see. If I give you an actual case in point, Henry McKean, who's going to be on later on talking about the Eurovision, tweeted a clip of him saying to Bambi Thug, I'm sorry I accidentally misgendered you. He has tagged me in this, so I'm now getting the conversation that follows. The conversation that follows is literally hundreds of people now threatening to murder each other. They are falling on each other's throats. They're calling each other every name under the sun. It is completely irrelevant and out by the side of it. But it's not a function of here is a piece of information. It's people getting just horrendously angry over nothing.
But I think this is the fundamental problem for me, is that social media is entertainment, not news. And we need to, you know, there needs to be a difference between, so you're like, don't get me wrong, I love, sometimes if I'm bored or I'm sitting in the car or whatever, I'll scroll through my Instagram reels or I'll look at stuff on X or on Facebook or whatever it is. But that's entertainment. That is not where you should be getting your information about key decisions in your life. And I think that's about the education and how we educate interaction with media.
Yeah, it is. But there's probably a substantial part of your audience, Anton, who are listening to the three of us thinking that we're all establishment farts.
You know? Thank you so much.
She's going to use that as the strapline of the show.
This is the point, that you already have an audience out there who are completely divorced from credible news sources, who are taking their information from the most bizarre places. You know, the kind of people.
But sorry, my point is that it's not just news. It's not information. It's that if you look at that debate that's now, that I referenced, that feels like reality. It feels like the grassroots. It feels like the things that matter to people. But you have to look at it and say, hang on a minute, how have we gotten into a corner where the reality of the world that is being projected on us is one of anger and dissent and mistrust and dislike?
It is. But
that's not normal. That's not the reality.
But it's not normal, but it's not accidental. You know, you have social media algorithm models that are designed to thrive on controversy and dispute and hate and everything else. And now you have dark actors who are using those tools for even more nefarious purposes than the
pouring fuel into that fire.
Than the designers of the algorithms ever even intended.
You know, Anton, it goes back to that negativity bias. It is what we are designed to do. If you're driving down the motorway and it's a lovely, like today, beautiful sunny day, and you're driving down and your side of the motorway is clear, you know, you've got the radio on, everything is great. And on the other side of the road, there's an accident. Every single person will look to say, oh, what's going on over there? Mm-hmm. Because we have this sort of curiosity about, is that causing us harm? Where there is pain, where there is harm, where there is discomfort, our mind is more likely to pay attention to that. We have to choose to pay attention to the positive. We have to choose to seek out the joy in life. And it is much, much more difficult for our minds, for our brains biologically to do that than to look at the pain and the anger and the hatred.
Well, on that basis, we've just let you know, we're getting lots of very nice pictures of the Aurora Borealis from all around the country. Wicklow, Mayo, Carlingford, City West, available all night. We'll gather them up and we'll, if we get a chance, we'll try to throw them up on the website. There's a question, text saying, what benefit for Russia is this? Why are they spreading this information in Ireland? And how does this affect neutrality? Well, I assume the answer to that is an inference into the previous US and UK reports, which is what they want is dissent. The objective is to unsettle any state where it is of their advantage to have it unsettled, whether that's the EU, whether that's the US.
Yeah, it's all about the geopolitical game. They are trying to create as much division within the European Union as it is possible for them to do. We're 4 or 5 weeks away from the European Parliament elections. They want to see, as many far-right people in the European Parliament as possible, AfD in Germany and elsewhere, and cause as much dissension as possible and make the place impossible to run in the years thereafter.
Let's look to matters then that are within our control, or at least within the state's control. There's a lot of detail in the Indo of the latest on RTE. Two questions, one being the final analysis of the barter account and all the spending that happened. The other being what now happens in relation to licence fee, media charge, exchequer funding, whatever else it might be. And the Indo is reporting inside RTE's barter account, two nights at Ronaldo's hotel, $1,500 on fruit juice, and €7,000 for a Spice Girls concert. You get a lot of fruit juice for €1,500, wouldn't you?
Do you know what? I think I could probably get a lifetime supply of fruit juice for that amount of money. There's a lot of money being spent here on entertainment type issues. A lot of money spent on flights. I mean, the 2019 Rugby World Cup in Japan, they clearly knew the pandemic was coming. They were spending all their budget because they spent $44,500 on flights, $47,000 on accommodation, and $10,000 on a return flight for just one person. So that covered sort of six people. It's a lot of money.
$10,000 on flights for one individual?
Just home. Just that's the flight home. They clearly, you know, sat in first class and were brought on a gold gold chariot through the airport. But yeah, so the 2019 World Cup was incredibly expensive. The Spice Girls didn't get too much. They brought 33 people, which is a lot. Again, 2019, and that only cost 7,500. So that wasn't, you know, quite as bad.
Now, at the risk of losing a limb, let me tentatively make a counterpoint to this. There is some of the expenditure, like the flip-flops and that kind of stuff, the Tuberty payments, where you can just say, look, that's utterly unacceptable, which never happened. But there are some of the expenditures, could you argue, where you'd say, if you're in a competitive market where you're trying to woo advertisers, you bring them to gigs and you wine them and dine them.
Exactly. That's exactly it. I think you have to spend money to make money.
So are we getting into cutting off nose despite face territory here? If this gets clamped down on, if there is a total leak...
You might be, but I'm not. Can you justify every single piece of expenditure in that that list there? Probably not. The fruit juice one was an event where there were, I don't know, large numbers of people, you know?
Nothing woos an advertiser like fruit juice.
Yeah, exactly.
Cold pressed.
Anybody in the commercial world who is trying to flog something or trying to get people to spend money with them is going to spend money in the effort to curry favour with them. Now, as I say, does that justify every shilling there? No, it doesn't. But it justifies some of it. And anybody, you know, that idea of flip-flops and all of that kind of stuff. Everybody has gone to commercial gigs where you get the courtesy bag at the end of it and all of it.
No, speak for yourself, Mark.
But thankfully...
I love a good courtesy bag, I'm with you.
No, thankfully it's an experience I haven't had for many years, but nor do I want it. But the point is, and it's rubbish. And why anybody does it and why people think it succeeds, I don't understand. But
is there a risk for RT as an organisation that if you get to a position where they are told sackcloth and ashes is the way of the future, that it ends up economically harming them rather than advantaging them because they can't then make the kind of relationships and sales that seem to be grist to the mill?
It will harm them. Yeah. Within that advertising world, there's a certain percentage of that sort of behaviour that is expected by some of the people who decide on where the ad spend goes.
Yeah.
And is that right? No, it isn't. I'm not defending it in any shape or form, but we all live in a world where we don't control necessarily every part of the game.
I think part of the problem is the name of the account. The barter account is not a good name.
No.
If they had accounted for the money appropriately, so the spend, for example, on the Spice Girls or on the three Harry Styles, Eagles and Westlife concerts, if they had called that something around advertising or around, client entertainment and had it more appropriately accounted for, then it wouldn't sound as...
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm much more concerned about the future of RTE and as an institution. You know, the sins of the past need to be fixed.
That brings us to that bit.
I'm not defending any of them.
License fee is still up in the air. And we see reports of, I think, 30 people being prosecuted for having failed to pay the license fee. 150 quid is the fine plus 100 in court fees, which is interesting when juxtaposed beside some of the numbers that we have just been discussing. Where do you think we're going to end up with that, Mark? Is it going to be a media charge?
I don't know, because Catherine Martin seems to be digging her heels in. I mean, this idea that RT would be funded completely by the state in the future is one of the most stupid ideas I have heard coming out of any political party in a long, long time. You cannot have a situation where the state broadcaster is going to be in yearly negotiations with the Minister for Finance about budgets. You know, I wouldn't trust Fianna Fáil any more than I would trust Sinn Féin than Fine Gael.
But surely it is more or less, I mean, there's a slight by proxy extension through it being done through a license fee, but the government can still set the license fee. The government can still yank the reins if they want it.
The more close control you give to people in the world of politics over broadcasting, you create a relationship that is dependent, and that's not healthy. There should be as much distance as possible. There should be either a household charge. The best idea that I've heard, which I know was knocked down within government, was adding X onto the broadband charge, because you would avoid the people who are at the poorer end of the game, so they don't have to pay. Anybody who can afford to pay for a broadband charge can afford to pay a tenner onto their to support journalism and public service broadcasting. And then in the meantime, you put as many controls as is necessary in RTE to ensure that the money is spent properly and wisely and reasonably.
Any views, 53106 at a cost of 30 cents or for free and for nothing on WhatsApp, 087 1400 106. Last thing, Louisa, to talk about is the front page of the Irish Daily Mail. Worrying outbreak of whooping cough, a surge of 79 cases as experts blame fall in vaccination rates. Whooping cough is one of those where its name doesn't sound that bad. If it is a very small child, it is extremely bad and potentially fatal.
Yeah, well, I was that very small child. When I was a baby, I got whooping cough because I wasn't allowed to be vaccinated. My parents would have vaccinated me, but for medical reasons, I wasn't allowed to be vaccinated. Got whooping cough, and it was I was so sick that the doctor wouldn't let me go into hospital, because if I went into hospital, I would be more likely to pick up an infection. So my parents spent, we lived in a mobile home while they were building our house at the time. They spent days, I think the guts of a week, sitting in the bathroom, one at a time, bringing in kettle after kettle after kettle of water so that there was steam in the room. And my mum would say that I used to go blue. It was the most terrifying experience she ever had as a parent, ever. So for me, you know, whooping cough is something that can be vaccinated against for the majority. And again, it's where the majority do it. They protect the minority like me who couldn't get the vaccine. And it does save lives. It is something that's a vaccine that's been around since before I was born. So it's around a very, very long time. It is safe. And again, this goes back to the misinformation. There's so much misinformation out there and nonsense, as it's called in the report, around vaccines and the impact that they have and anti-vaccines. And actually, what we see is a situation where children, and it is predominantly children under the age of 5 who are most at risk here, and babies under 6 months cannot get vaccinated, and their lives are at risk from what can be prevented.
Yeah, and there's a very pithy line in the piece in the Mail, a quote from Dr. Niall Conroy, who's an adjunct professor of public health at University College Cork. And he says, "We are now seeing lots of whooping cough in Ireland. Small babies can and do die from it. The vaccine is safe and effective. It's important to keep small babies safe. That should be all we need to say." 53106 or 087 1400 106. We're going to be talking to Henry McKean in a couple of minutes about Eurovision and our prospects and performance thus far. If ye were betting people, is this our year? Are we finally going to break our losing streak? Are you febrile with anticipation for this evening?
Do you know, before I came in here, I didn't even know the name of the Irish act, but I'm pro-Ireland. I support it all the way, and I think we will absolutely win.
Nothing says pro-Ireland like not knowing the name of our act. Mark, have you taken more interest in it than that?
It will probably not surprise you to discover that the answer to that is no. It's been an interesting week, because if you look at the Israel, I must say I'd wondered whether they would qualify out of the semi-final. And if you look at the figures for the various countries, I mean, really strong, solid support. No evidence of those phone calls being manipulated by every Israeli embassy and every one of the countries pressing redial. It all seems to have been, as far as I can see, a genuine expression of support. Kind of, it's interesting that that is the case given the broader narratives that are around.
Isn't it indeed? Well, we'll be talking to Henry about our prospects directly after this break. Big thank you to Louisa Meehan, Woodview HRM, HR and Dispute Resolution Expert, and Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain Editor with the Irish Times.
The Anton Savage Show with Kieries.ie on News Talk.